This is Mark Langdon's Bets Club.
Hello and a warm welcome back to Mark Langdon's Bets Club, your one-stop shop for football betting insight. As always, plenty to get through. We'll be looking back on some glorious FA Cup action. There's been managerial changes in the Premier League and, of course, looking ahead to a bumper weekend of Premier League and EFL football. Mark, good to be back. How's things?
Yeah, well, I say all good. That's the stock answer, isn't it? We'll probably speak about Tottenham at some stage, but my word, that was a bad and miserable Tuesday night. Seeing them not only get beat at Middlesbrough, but you know, thoroughly deserve to get beat in my view as well. So yeah, a depressing FA Cup exit, another year without a trophy. But we go on.
Yeah, just the most impossible teams to kind of rank where you are at the moment. As you say, we'll get onto that shortly. I think we have to start with probably something we don't really want to be speaking about, but we must. It goes without saying, our thoughts with everyone involved who's been caught up in the terrible, terrible scenes out in Ukraine at the moment. And of course, it does have implications on football. I think it's only right we speak about those. Roman Abramovich caught up with things. It will mean implications for Chelsea. Mark, just fill us in on what's going on at the moment.
Yeah, so Roman Abramovich has put the club up for sale. Of course, Jack, I mean, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter, but there, you could sort of say basically nothing matters, does it, when sort of, you know, there's a sort of war going on in Europe, really. But I wrote about this last week in my column that it's sort of sticking to routine and, you know, just still concentrating on those kind of small things and the stuff that brings you enjoyment can actually help, I think, you know, in some regards. So I think it's right that we sort of, you know, carry on and just talk about football, even that it's the most important of the unimportant things, I think.
Absolutely.
The saying goes. But I think this is obviously, you know, huge news for Chelsea. Abramovich has bankrolled a team that was, you know, on knocking around sort of Champions League sort of spots. And we're on the up anyway, in some respects, but we're obviously running out of cash at one stage. He's managed to bankroll them to sort of success in just about every competition that they've been involved in. You know, he's done it in a way that has sort of gone against the grain, really, of how you're supposed to be successful, because, you know, it's all this, you know, it's a sustainability in terms of like managers and progression planning and, you know, God, you've got to be there a long time, haven't you? You know, that's the way you win trophies. He did it the other way, really, just kept sacking managers and kept bringing in new ones, and the players seem to respond to that. I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of kind of big name billionaires lining up to maybe get together and sort of get involved and buy Chelsea. There's sort of interest from the US and the Swiss, and maybe there'll be a consortium. So it's unlikely that they're going to go bust. At the same time, you know, I think Abramovich was at times almost prepared to write blank checks when they didn't have the transfer ban. And you can never be sure that will be the case with anyone else that comes in. So I think if you were predicting now about sort of the next 5 years for Chelsea, I think you would suggest maybe that there'd probably more downside and more reasons to expect them to go backwards a little bit rather than upwards and forwards. It doesn't mean that it will happen that way, of course, or that they might stay about the same. But I think if you were, you know, if you were just asking me right now what's going to happen, I think the sensible option in terms of those choices is to say they'll probably go a little bit backwards. But, you know, from how high they are, I mean, it's, you know, I don't see them sort of falling to relegation or mid-table or anything like that.
The gap between Manchester City and Liverpool and the rest of the Premier League already seems quite large, and I feel as if at the start of the season you probably put Chelsea into the category with both of those clubs. It feels as if they've been a little way off the pace for the majority of the season. Will that gap grow now?
No, I wouldn't necessarily say that, Jack, because I think they've been impacted by COVID. Thomas Tuchel has spoken quite a lot about that. Fixture congestion hasn't helped them at all. World Club Cup as well, you know, they've
you can say that about every club though, couldn't you?
Yeah, well, you could, but I think in terms of, say, Liverpool and Man City, who are Chelsea's direct rivals, Jack. I think it's fair to say that Chelsea have had it rougher than those two. And, you know, last year, Liverpool had injury crisis and were unable to sort of sustain the pace. I think it does make a big impact. I think that, you know, Tuchel said there was times when he was, you know, they were getting on the bus and they were having to remember like what competition and where they were going because the games were coming so sort of thick and fast for them. I think Lukaku's form hasn't helped, but I would still, if you look at when Chelsea play against the very best teams, they're really not that far off. You know, that EFL Cup final with Liverpool could have gone either way. They lost it on penalties in the end. They played Man City a little while ago, lost 1-0. Lukaku missed a one-on-one at 0-0. Maybe that changes the game. They're still, I think, a big runner in this season's Champions League. They're still in the FA Cup, the quarterfinals as well there. But what I do think is that, you know, we have got these three teams that are so extraordinarily good that you do wonder, like, for other teams, like, what's the point almost at times? You know, we had Liverpool and Chelsea in the EFL Cup final. The big three are through to the last eight of the FA Cup. And it is quite dispiriting, I think, for the rest when you just see how good, you know, they are. And then you see kind of the money that will be pumped into Newcastle over the next few years. And it does make you kind of, I don't know, just feel, like I said, dispirited. I know Leicester have bucked the trend to some extent, won an FA Cup and a league title. But generally speaking, there is now a growing gap. And while I don't think Chelsea are necessarily going to sort of, go forwards necessarily without Abramovich, I certainly don't see him, you know, backpedaling dramatically.
Yeah, I mean, you only have to look at the winners sheet of the past decade in the EFL Cup. I mean, it's fairly damning, isn't it? Manchester City basically all of the spots, barring a couple. It's a cup competition dominated by the top sides, as is the FA Cup. Mark, a positive note, and that is of Southampton. Now, you are always praising Hasenhüttl's men, but you put them up for the FA Cup at the start of the tournament, and they've progressed nicely into the quarterfinals.
Yeah, absolutely. I was absolutely furious when I saw the team last night. I don't know why he rested so many players. Maybe he feels like they've got a crack at doing something decent in Europe in terms of, you know, for a Premier League position, because obviously they are really on the up at the moment, but managed to get through against West Ham. They're in the quarterfinals, like you say. You just want a sort of nice draw here. You want Liverpool, Chelsea, Man City to get each, you know, two of them to play each other, and you want a home tie against somebody else that's not one of those three. I really hate it when you get these managers or pundits say, well, you've got to beat the best at some stage. No, you haven't. You've just got to avoid them for as long as possible and sneak through. But the fact of the matter is, you know, it's quite exciting to see them in the quarterfinals, Jack, but if they get Liverpool away or they get Man City away, I mean, they're probably going out. And so, you know, there is a sort of, a school of thought that if you get them at home, maybe you could get rid of one of them and, you know, that might give you an easier draw in the next round. But as well as like Middlesbrough have done or Forest or, you know, Huddersfield, you want one of them at home in the quarterfinals. I'd settle for it. I know that Everton are not through yet. I'd settle for Everton at home in the quarterfinals. So I'm not being too greedy.
What price did we get them at? Remind me.
Oh, I think it was, they were about 50s, weren't they? Because we put up Wolves and Southampton. They were both sort of in that sort of 40, 50 to one bracket. So, yeah, I mean, they've got chances. I am, like I say, a little bit dispirited by how good the front three are. And Chelsea had to really battle through, didn't they, against Luton. But you look at their bench and, you know, it's still difficult to beat them.
Absolutely. We must speak about your boys, Mark. Tottenham, what is going on? I mean, I keep harping back to that performance against Manchester City. But when we previewed that game, you were giving Spurs a good chat, and I thought, what has Mark, you know, been on the drink a bit earlier? And rightly so, they delivered a performance that you spoke of, and I was thinking, oh, maybe you've turned a corner. And then since that point, it has been abysmal.
Well, they beat Leeds 4-0 as well. So I think what it is that they like to play against teams that give, you know, wide open spaces in behind. They're not so good.
<we all?
laughs> Yeah, exactly. But they're better than, because if you think about the draw with Liverpool, they're better than most at exploiting those spaces in behind, they really struggle with creativity from central midfield. And sometimes it doesn't matter how good Kane, Son, Kulusevski are, etc. If you don't get the ball to them quickly, then you're in trouble. I actually would prefer, I think, and not just for my own sanity, but prefer to talk about Chris Wilder. I mean, what a guy he is, what a manager he is, you know, what he did with Sheffield United and before that, and what he's doing now with Middlesbrough, a team that was in the doldrums, but he's kind of connected the fans back with the football team. They were so well organised. In the second half and in the first half of extra time particularly, they were the better team against a Premier League side that, even if they're not top four, they've got ambitions to be a top six team. We've got Conte as manager. They've got the England captain up front. And how well they played. Johnny Howson in midfield. Oh. I mean, what a performance from him. He was better than...
Let's just do the rest of the episode on him. he would certainly still get in Norwich's setup. He's one of those players, Mark, who you look at and go, how have you not forged more of a career in the Premier League? I just think he's such a good footballer.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was better than Winks and Højbjerg combined. And, you know, that not maybe saying too much. Them two have come in for a lot of criticism in the last few sort of days in the Blaine game. But, yeah, what a story for Middlesbrough. They've beaten Manchester United. They've beaten Tottenham. They'll fear nobody, of course, now in the quarterfinals. And I think it would be just reward, maybe, if they could get to Wembley at least, you know, and get a semi-final spot. So if Southampton don't win it, then hopefully Middlesbrough do, because I thought that was fantastic.
Absolutely. We'll get more on the EFL with Dan Childs later, but that playoff race for, as always, really, in the Championship, really hotting up nicely. And feels, you know, particularly wide open this season. I think we say that all the while, but particularly this season. Mark, let's get on to the Premier League. There's been a change at Leeds United. Their beloved Bielsa has gone. Did you see that one coming?
I only saw it coming in as much as, like, all the stories coming out of Leeds were suggesting that, you know, Jesse Marsh had already been sounded out a couple of weeks ago. And I think the writing's on the wall when that happens. If I hadn't have known that, then I wouldn't have thought it was possible, because I felt like he'd done so much for the club in those first sort of, you know, what, nearly 4 years, that he deserved the opportunity to keep them in the league once Bamford and Phillips returned from injury. And I'm not surprised, because you shouldn't be surprised in football. We've seen kind of harsher sackings than this one previously. But I don't think they're getting necessarily a better manager in. I think that Bielsa took a pretty average Championship team to the brink of promotion in year one, to promotion in year two, playing unbelievably attractive football, to ninth in the Premier League in his first campaign there. At the first sign of proper trouble, they've got rid of him. And, you know, I don't like to see that. And I also don't like to see these, you know, the kind of the told you so merchants that have been waiting for the best part of 4 years for it to go wrong at Bielsa. And now, we told you it wouldn't work out. It did work. It worked fantastically. He's taken Leeds from mid-table to nowhere, really, in terms of the Championship. I mean, that Championship is, as you just mentioned there, Jack, it's a mad league. 1 year you can kind of be fighting relegation. Next, it doesn't take that much to sometimes be, you know, jostling for the playoffs. But the way that he galvanised the city, you know, that to me, more than anything he did as a football manager, is why he's so special. And, like, I mean, if you look at recent results, they've had a really hard run of fixtures. Now, I know that he may be too gung-ho in certain situations, but that attitude, I think, maybe would have still won Leeds enough games to keep them up. I mean, yeah. Hodgson's come in at Watford and done kind of what Hodgson does. He's kept 3 clean sheets in 6 games. But, I mean, they're not going anywhere, are they, in terms of the league table? And I just think that it's pretty depressing, really, that Leeds pressed the panic button, like I say, the first time he went on any kind of really bad run.
It feels not only an end of an era for Leeds United, and we'll speak more of that shortly, Mark, but it feels sad because, kind of casting my mind back to 2018, 2019, it was Chris Wilder at Sheffield United, Daniel Farke at Norwich City, and Bielsa at Leeds United. And I think it was just almost a transition for Championship football in the way that they kind of proved the point that actually you can go up from the Championship playing this style. And now that's over. They succeeded in their own rights, got their respective teams to the Premier League. And it just shows to me, as a fan of a, you know, a smaller club fighting in a really big league, it's almost impossible, whatever you do. And sadly, it's always the manager that, you know, that gets in the firing line first. And often the foundations are far bigger. You simply cannot compete on a consistent level. You might be able to do it for a season, two seasons, three. You're eventually going to get found out. You know, the house always wins in this case.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, totally agree. And if you look at those mid-table Premier League teams, it doesn't take much, I don't think, to go from 10th to 17th. It can be an injury to, you know, an England international, or in the case of Leeds, two England internationals in absolutely massive positions, centre forward, you know, and that player just in front of the defence. I mean, you know, two of the real important enforcers. And I mean, I didn't appreciate Liam Cooper's maybe influence on the team as well. And I still wouldn't be 100% that he's the reason why they're conceding loads of goals, his absence. But he has been a mainstay. And if you think Cooper, Phillips, Bamford out of your team, that's a big one, isn't it? You know, Southampton are now riding crest of a wave. Take, I don't know, Salisu, Ward-Prowse and Broyer out of their team. Maybe, you know, maybe they're in a relegation battle and suddenly Hasenhüttl is under big pressure. So, like I said, I think they've done the wrong thing. And I really hate it when the kind of English or certain aspects of the English-British media kind of question the foreign motives and models. You know, like if you think back to Guardiola, oh, he had to change. He won't be able to do what he does in English football. Well, he did, and he has. And Klopp the same. And, you know, Bielsa in his own way has shown that his football can succeed in the Premier League, because it did. You know, they finished ninth last season. Yeah. They're not in the relegation zone as it stands. I still don't think that they'll actually be relegated. So I think I've done the wrong thing.
Yeah, Mark, you're not a particularly you know, fond of this decision. Neither are our listeners. We ran a poll on Racing Post Sport Twitter, well worth a follow. That account's up and running and booming at the moment. And we asked, do you think Leeds now have a better chance of staying up with Jesse Marsh in charge? 33% of the vote said yes. 22% of the vote said it doesn't make a difference. But the majority says no, 45% of that vote. Now, you said at the start of this little segment, Mark, that you don't think there's too much of a difference in kind of quality between Bielsa and Jesse Marsh. Just educate those of us who maybe aren't too familiar of the new man at Leeds.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's somebody that he's very, to quote my colleague James Milton, he bleeds Red Bull, Jesse Marsh, because he's been in kind of that Red Bull factory for quite some time. First in
incredibly
New York.
Awake then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's got lots of energy. So he was with Red Bull in New York. Then he went to, he's been in Austria with Salzburg. And now, before he got the league job, he was at Leipzig. He was sacked at Leipzig. I think it was a difficult job for him because replacing Julian Nagelsmann was always going to be tough. Throw in the fact that they also lost the two centre-halves. Konate went to Liverpool and Upamecano went to Bayern Munich. There was a big rebuilding job sort of needed there, I think. And he walked into a difficult situation. I think he will maintain levels of that Leeds press that they had, probably not to the emps that Bielsa went to, you know, that man for man all over the pitch. I think it'll be more of a kind of classic, you know, sort of normal pressing that they try to do now. But I think it will still be high energy football. I wouldn't say he's sort of, you know, absolutely desperate to have possession of the ball. He might look to get it forward relatively sort of quickly, I suppose. But they haven't really got anyone up front at the moment, have they, to put the ball through to. So the biggest question mark I think I have is, can he survive outside of the Red Bull production line? The second one is, I don't think it takes long for people, wrongly in my view, but the American accent, I think it is a difficult one. You know, Bob Bradley was laughed out of town almost before he arrived. You know, the kind of language around locker room, soccer, just those things really get picked on and picked apart too easily, in my view. If you go to Celtic, Ange Postecoglou had the same thing, I think, to, you know, when he was first arrived, like, who's this Aussie guy trying to tell us how to play football? But he's winning over the doubters quite quickly. And just on that, Jack, we will have a Scottish Premiership special soon. We've had quite a few questions in from people saying, you need to talk about the Scottish Premiership. I've got somebody on for next week that can go through that, and we'll have a look at the Scottish Premiership bet. It's very close at the moment.
Yeah, really looking forward to that one. Yeah, you can catch it if you subscribe to Mark Langdon's Bets Club. But for now, let's take a look at this week's Premier League fixtures. Our match of the day, a Manchester derby, Manchester City 2-5, 8-1 Manchester United, 4-1 the draw. If you want to watch it, sit yourself down, 4:30 on Sunday. Mark, where shall we start with this one? City, how should we describe their performance against Peterborough? Professional?
Unwatchable for me, Jack, because I was watching the Spurs debacle. It looked professional. I've only sort of gone over the stats, and you know, I was surprised it took them so long to break Peterborough down.
Peterborough, actually, considering how poor they've been in the Championship, I thought they looked quite solid.
I suppose it's a bit of a free hit, isn't it, against Man City? But I do think that this is something that maybe City haven't been quite as, I suppose, at their best in recent games. They got beat by Tottenham, and I think that was fair and square, that loss. I know they had a lot of possession, but it wasn't a sort of dominant City performance by any stretch of the imagination. Against Everton, there was that handball situation that maybe, on another day sees them drop points. And I didn't think they were great in the first half, certainly at Goodison either. And then they've kind of needed a bit of time to break Peterborough down. So just one of those sticky spots, I think, really, for Pep Guardiola's team. I mean, it goes something without saying, you know, it really is going some stretch, isn't it, to say that they're in a crisis or having a wobble as such, because they're still clear in the Premier League. They're almost certainly through in the Champions League, and they're in the FA Cup quarterfinal. So it's by no means disastrous, but they're maybe not quite just at the moment at their free-flowing best. So I'm expecting it to be a bit of a grind against Manchester United, I think.
Do you think Manchester United will be sensing an opportunity here then?
Well, under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, there were times during the Manchester derby when they caused City a lot of problems. And if we sort of discussed in where Tottenham were able to exploit Man City, United do have the potential to do something similar on the break. Rashford and Sancho, players like that, have got that sort of, you know, pace in the wide areas that really City don't like playing against, because they prefer to have their fullbacks way up the pitch and sort of dictating play. And we saw Solskjaer do that on more than one occasion. The problem is, you can only really do that if you A, keep the score sort of at 0-0 for a long time, or you're able to score first even, because as soon as City score, and if you go back to the reverse fixture, City just scored a couple of goals and just strangled the life out of Manchester United. It was impossible for United to get a kick at times. It was an embarrassing performance in some respects, that reverse league game. So I think the first goal against City, or that sort of first 20-25 minutes, is absolutely huge if you want to play on the counter-attack. The question mark about United is that they're not as dangerous on the counter if Cristiano Ronaldo plays, because that's not really his game, or certainly not anymore. It used to be, but it's not anymore.
Well, how, you know, is it the time to drop him in that case for this game?
I think it is.
Or is he simply undroppable?
He's not undroppable. And, you know, Ralph Rangnick has made calls like that previously. And I think he looks at the opposition and then works out, you know, he's somebody that is able to be reactionary in that point of view. I mean, if you go back to that game against Atletico the other week, he was worried about the left-hand side. So he just played Lindelof at right back to try to, to stop those attacks down the Atletico left. So I think it is a massive call if you drop Cristiano Ronaldo. But He hasn't been banging in loads of goals as it is. And I do think that this is the type of game, really, where you maybe don't need Ronaldo from the start. That's not to say that if he does start, he's still your biggest chance of scoring a goal. So it's quite a complicated situation, I think, for United. But I think for the overall scheme of things, you probably are better off going with pace up front in a game like this, because United have done it before to City. And, you know, Ronaldo becomes a passenger if you haven't got the ball, and you're not going to have much of the ball against Man City. So I think this is a game where you do need harder workers and maybe the type of player that can hit on the break.
Mark, the last time you, I could sense you feeling that this will be close. The last time you called a game like this was the EFL Cup final. You've got that bang on in terms of struggling to.
Well, in terms of the tip, I did.
It feels as if you're talking this up in a similar fashion.
Yeah, but I mean, that game actually was much more exciting than I was expecting. But I tend to think that big games ultimately, you know, a little bit of a letdown more often than not. So I was going for Man City to win and under 3.5 goals. Five of City's six Premier League wins since Boxing Day have been with under 3.5 goals. Tottenham, the only team to score against them in the last six matches. And even when they put five past Sporting in the Champions League, their XG was only, and I'll put only in inverted commas, because 1.8 is still a hefty return away from home in the Champions League knockout stages. But, you know, if you create 1.8 XG, you don't expect to score five goals. So City are not creating loads and loads of opportunities at the moment. United are not taking the chances that are coming their way either. And I expect them to play, you know, pretty defensively in this game.
Let's get some Mark's best bets for the rest of the Premier League action then. Saturday lunchtime, Leicester Leeds. Excited for this one, Mark?
Yeah, I'm just not really sure what way it's going to play. Very difficult to know how Leeds react to the Bielsa sacking or, you know, parting of ways. I was maybe going to go for Leicester and both teams to score, but it would be, I would say, this is one to leave alone. Goals are likely, though. 9 of Leicester's last 10 have been over 2.5 at home. But 4-7 on 3 or more goals is pretty short, isn't it?
Yeah. Are you leaving it alone because you've got a busy Saturday planned?
Yeah, well, it is my daughter's birthday party on Saturday, but that's not the reason I'm leaving it alone from a betting point of view, as she's probably testified for the rest of her 9 years that I don't tend to let that get in the way.
I hear that children's parties are quite elaborate nowadays. There's a lot going on. Have you been sort of chief party planner?
I've been chief party payer. It's a pretty expensive business to be in. Now she's going to some like jumping trampoline park. There's 15 of them. Pizza afterwards. I'm sure they'll have more fun than I will.
Sounds like a good day. Yeah. Saturday, 3 o'clock, Aston Villa against Southampton. Just looking at Southampton's recent form, lots of green on there. Doing very well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I was looking at Southampton draw no bet for this game. They did rest players in midweek. They still beat West Ham. 2 defeats in their last 16 matches in all competitions. 10 goals scored in the last 5 away games in the Premier League. And those away games were at Man United, Tottenham, West Ham, and then Crystal Palace and Wolves. So, to get 10 goals in, that's a pretty strong return. Villa did bounce back last week against Brighton, but I think they've been inconsistent. I can't say any better than that, really, about Villa in recent weeks. And I think that Southampton's level of performance is much more reliable.
Burnley-Chelsea will be the next game we preview. Burnley will be chuffed with how their past kind of month has gone.
Yeah, I suppose they'll just be a little bit gutted that they lost that game late on against Leicester, didn't they, on Tuesday night when the subs, Maddison and Vardy, sort of nicked the game. But overall, I think, yeah, you're absolutely right. If you take the month as a whole, they've probably got more points than they expected from a difficult enough run of fixtures. For this one, I was looking at draw half-time, Chelsea full-time. Chelsea's last 5 league wins, they've been level at the break in all of them. They've only been 2 goals in the first half in the last 6 matches at Turf Moor. So I think you know the way that Burnley are going to approach it. And for Chelsea, it'll be a bit like that trip to Selhurst a couple of weeks ago when, you know, it's just about staying patient and trying to win the game, probably with the substitutes later on.
Newcastle, Brighton. You mentioned Brighton's recent defeat to Aston Villa. I'm not going to say, is it, you know, start, you know, should we start being concerned about Brighton? But they don't look great.
3 wins in their last 24 games in all
competitions. I just can't believe that stat. When you mentioned it last week, I told a friend of mine in a pub, and he just wasn't having it. And I had to bring up the form guy, and I was like, "Yeah, this is real. Mark Langer doesn't tell lies."
No, so I mean, then those 3 wins were against Brentford, Watford, and Everton. So you know, teams that are either out of form or you know, in the relegation zone or very near the relegation zone. So I was going to go for the draw, though, in this game, because Brighton, that stat about them only winning 3 of the last 24 is in 90 minutes. They won a couple of games in extra time. 9 of the last 14 away games for Brighton have been draws. You're right, they don't look great at the moment. Just as far as Newcastle are concerned, obviously going in the right direction. They've not conceded more than once now. In a game since Christmas. So Eddie Howe really sort of tightened up the defence, obviously got new arrivals in that have helped. Also, tactically, probably, you know, he must, I haven't seen enough of them to sort of say exactly what he's done, but, you know, you can just tell by the stats they're going in the right direction. It's just difficult to beat Brighton. I sort of mock the fact they don't win many games. They don't lose very many either, Jack.
Yeah, no, it's spot on. Norwich, Brentford. I just know how this is going to go. I've been bad-mouthing Brentford for the entirety of this season on this very podcast. I feel as if the cult following of Mark Langdon starting to transition to my opinion that I think Brentford will go down. They lost again at the weekend. I can just see this one. Brentford turning up to Carrow Road, cruising past us. I'll walk out of Carrow Road, regain mobile reception, just tweets flood in saying how wrong I was. Am I right with that opinion, Mark?
I fancy Brentford draw no bet in this game, Jack. Mm. Last week I mentioned about their tough run of fixtures. And then, of course, they had the silver sent off after, 11 minutes against Newcastle. That changes the whole complexion of the game. I think Eriksen and Tony are getting closer to fitness. And then just look at the stats over a whole season. And like 538, respective website, it's got Brentford finishing 10 points ahead of Norwich. It's actually got their win percentage at 44% at Carrow Road, which would certainly suggest that maybe Brentford are a bet in this game. Understats expected points, 17.5 for Norwich so far this season. Brentford 36. FB Ref have got Brentford 11 on expected goal difference, and Norwich are by far the worst team on that sort of statistic. So, I mean, the underlying stats suggest that over the course of the campaign, Brentford have been quite a bit better than Norwich. Obviously, they're having a tough run at the moment. I think there have been excuses for that. The Bees, DMB.
Yeah, it's struggling to disagree with that. Just on Christian Eriksen, Mark, what do you think his impact will be from now until the end of the campaign?
I think it can only be positive. I mean, it's hard to know to what extent he kind of has still got that confidence in his own ability, both in terms of technique, but also, you know, the fitness to be able to really push himself, because psychologically, I mean, you know, he'd only be human, wouldn't he, to have some doubts himself. I know he says he hasn't, but, you know, who knows exactly what's going through his head. But he's absolute quality. I mean, you know, even a kind of 60, 70% Eriksen, I think, is still, you know, better than Brentford. And I presume he's using, and I don't mean that, to, you know, disparagingly for Brentford, he's probably using Brentford as a shop window to get somewhere where he would expect to, you know, level he'd expect to be playing at for next season. So I think it's a big few months for him. And, you know, on the ball, he's still an absolute joy, and Tottenham haven't replaced him.
Absolutely. Let's talk about Wolves against Palace next. Now, I'm a big fan of Bruce Millington's Twitter account, and it's always joyful to see one of his tweets, and then you see that there's been 69 replies, and you think, oh, hello, something's kicked off here. Bruce tweeted on Wednesday night, "Tonight's the night any Palace fan with a brain realises Vieira is officially inferior to Roy." Do you hold that opinion, Mark?
I think Bruce retracted it, didn't he, later on, I think. So.
Well, he said that this was a poorly worded tweet, and I apologise to those who took offence, wishing everyone an enjoyable and peaceful day.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, so he didn't, yeah, he still maintained, I mean, he just likes Roy, I think, is the you know, I think he gets annoyed with the Palace fans that, you know, are dismissive of what Hodgson did at Palace for, you know, a sustained period of time with inferior players to what they've got now. And, you know, I think that maybe feels like Hodgson deserves more respect for the work he did at Selhurst Park. And maybe that's right. What I would say is that Palace, the last 16 league games since they won the reverse fixture against Wolves, they've only beaten Everton, Norwich and Watford, and they're all in the bottom four. So it's been a strange old season for Palace. They're in the FA Cup quarterfinals now, aren't they? So, you know, a lot to be excited about with that. But I was looking at a draw in this game, you know, because Palace don't win too often. Wolves have only had four draws this season, which surprised me given how few goals there are in their matches. But a lot of their games are very close, and it wouldn't surprise me in terms of the rest of the season if those draws started to pick up.
Yeah, Roy or Vieira, who would you choose? Let us know on Twitter. Liverpool West Ham, the evening game on Saturday. Looking forward to this one again, Mark. Is it excited for the early kickoff and the evening game on Saturday?
Should be a high scoring game, I think, this one. I was looking at Liverpool to score in both halves at odds of 20 to 23. Happened in 8 of their 13 Premier League games at Anfield this season, which, you know, is better than the odds that you're getting. But I think it's not outstanding. But if you take away Man City and Chelsea, then it becomes 8 in 11. And obviously, Man City and Chelsea are much better than sort of your average Premier League teams. I was also just wondering a little bit about West Ham tiredness. It seems to me that their small squad has been stretched for you know, a while now. They've got Sevilla in the Europa League coming up as well. I mean, it's a massive game for the whole club. I just wonder if minds are already sort of drifting towards that tide, which, you know, could, it won't make or break their season, but if they get through it, will certainly add a lot of excitement to it.
Where are we at with West Ham in the Europa League? Are we confident that they'll, you know, continue quite strongly there?
I think they'll go out to Sevilla. I think Sevilla are favourites in that game. West Ham will need to be at their absolute best.
Watford Arsenal on Sunday, this one at 2 o'clock. Watford in, well, not great form, put it politely.
Absolutely not. I mean, at some stage they need to open up, don't they? But I don't think that's in Hodgson's nature. I think he will try to keep it tight, hope to nick something on the break, or, you know, set piece. He's got players that could do that, in terms of some, you know, Dennis has done very well in the Premier League this season, but they're just not winning enough games. So it looks like they're going to be relegated. I was looking at an Arsenal win, and then you can play this one one or two ways, under 3.5 goals or under 4.5 goals. I'd probably edge towards the under 4.5, but, you know, either of those two, really.
Spurs Everton, Monday night. Can you win here, Mark?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Everton away from home been a joke in the Premier League. 8 defeats and 2 draws from the last 10. The draws came at Chelsea and Manchester United, quite bizarrely. But I do think that Tottenham are much better off a break. I mean, they've got a really small squad. Conte got rid of Lo Celso and Ndombele, Brian Hill, and somebody else in January. And so the squad looks thin. And so I think that when they're playing back-to-back-to-back-to-back like they did with 4 away games in a very short period of time, they just looked a bit knackered. But coming off nearly a week break, I think they'll be good enough to beat Everton with the attacking quality they've got and the concerns I've got just in general about Everton. So Spurs and over 2.5 goals.
Can Everton deem themselves unlucky against Manchester City?
Yeah, they can. I do think that the apology that they demanded was absolutely pathetic, though. I mean, how many times would, you know, as Andre Gomez got to apologise for his woeful performance against Southampton that I saw the other week in the second half, or, you know, every time Pickford makes a mistake, or every time Lampard picks the wrong team, have they got to apologise? Yes, they were unlucky in respect that it was a penalty and I was surprised it wasn't given. But, you know, Everton are not in a relegation battle because of referees. They're in a relegation battle because they've signed appallingly. They've made wrong managerial choices. And the team's just not great at the moment.
Other than that, it's all going well. I know Dan Childs is fired up this week, so let's get his EFL best bets.
And now we welcome the Racing Post, Dan Childs. Dan, you were 3 out of 3 last week on the pod. Well done.
Thank you. Yeah, nice to get a clean sweep.
I hope you made it pay personally as well.
Yeah, no, I had a decent weekend. Yeah, having a good year so far. So long may it continue.
Yeah, absolutely. We've had a question in from Bermuda. He's not going to test you about Sean Gota. What he wants to know, he wants to discuss the gap between the Championship and League One, because Bermuda says Rotherham and Wigan sort of yo-yoing now between the two leagues. And we've seen like a decent team like Peterborough in League One really struggle in the Championship. Why are so many League One teams getting it wrong, if they are getting it wrong in the first place, Dan?
Well, first thing I would say is that, I mean, it is a fairly big gap. I mean, to put it in sort of, you know, comparative terms, you'd say it's a bigger gap than, say, the gap between League One and League Two, and a smaller gap than there is between the Premier League and the Championship. I think as the finances, as you go further down the leagues, the difference between the finances is obviously, going to get smaller. So, Championship to League One is going to be big, but I don't think it's insurmountable. I mean, some of the clubs you mentioned there, it's down to recruitment, really. I mean, Peterborough, this poor recruitment really is the reason that they've been so uncompetitive this season. They brought a lot of new players in. I can't think of a single one of them that's made a big difference for them this season. And they've lost the likes of, they sold Mo Isalefa, MK Dons in the summer. Then in January, they've got even weaker with letting Siriki Dembele go to Bournemouth. I mean, that's two of their best attackers from last season. So if you're not going to strengthen, and you're actually arguably that they've got weaker, it's not that much of a surprise that they've struggled. You mentioned sort of Wigan as well with the yo-yo in. I mean, I think when they were last relegated, they had a points deduction. So that would have, and the financial issues that they had. So I think it's kind of individual, circumstances really, rather than a massive trend. And you look at teams, that have come up to the Championship in recent years, some of them, Blackpool, that are, recruited really well, bringing in the likes of Josh Bowler, Richard Keogh, experienced centre-back, Shane Lavery in from Northern Ireland, good recruitment, and they're nice and solid in the division. And then I look at the likes of sort of Barnsley, second season, after going up, they made the playoffs, and you've got Coventry, second season after going up, and they're kind of pushing for the playoffs. So I just think, it is down to recruitment, bringing in the right players.
Peterborough, I mean, recruitment has been one of their strengths over the last however many years. So,
I mean, admittedly, budget-wise, a club of their size, you would probably say their natural level is probably League One. So it is going to be hard for them harder for them than, say, if a Sunderland or an Ipswich came up, would be easier for them to recruit the players of Championship standard. But, as Blackpool have shown on a small budget, and Barnsley and Luton and Coventry, it can be done.
OK, and then turning our attention back to the weekend coupon, what would be your best bet, do you think, this weekend?
I'm going to go drop down to League One, actually, and Sunderland away to Charlton. Odds against, I think, looks a really good bet. Sunderland, I think I do rate Alex Neil, who they've brought in as their new manager. I think he did a really good job at Preston. Did a pretty good job, I thought, his time at Norwich as well. I just think he needed a bit of a lift-off moment. There'd been a lot of bad results before he'd come in. Lee Johnson was obviously sacked after that 6-0 loss at Bolton. They hadn't done very well under the caretaker management, and he needed a lift-off moment. They went to Wigan last week and won 3-0. I mean, that's if anything's going to be a statement to the rest of the division, that would be it, to win 3-0 at Wigan. They've got good players. I think, probably going to be too late for them now to push for the top two, but top six looks likely. And I think going to Charlton now, who have lost 5 games in a row under Johnny Jackson, could be a good game for them. Johnny Jackson's first game, actually, as Charlton manager, was a 1-0 win at Sunderland. But since then, a lot of injuries have been piling up. And they've got to be a bit careful, Charlton, to avoid getting sucked into a relegation scrap.
Blimey, they really must have fallen off a cliff if you're talking about relegation. And what about your next two bets?
Yeah, next two are both going to be League Two. First of all, I'm going to go for Swindon away to Bradford to sort of pile on the pain for Mark Hughes' Bradford. I mean, we opposed Bradford last week. As I mentioned, it's all well and good having a high-profile manager coming in, but there's no transfer window open, so he can't change the squad. and it looks a tough job for him at the moment. That 2-0 loss to Mansfield was their fourth loss in a row for Bradford, and 9 points above the relegation zone. I mean, so there's a, you know, a reasonable buffer, but the way they're going, you know, they need to be a little bit careful. That they get crowds regularly, Bradford, of around 15,000 for home games, but they've only actually won one of their last 12 home matches. So you get the feeling sometimes with the markets, they kind of factor in that home, you know, the support that they get a little bit too much. I mean, Swindon are going off at the moment as outsiders to win this game. I can't see that. They're eighth in the division, pushing for a playoff place. Could even maybe, you know, push for the top three. They've won three of their last four games, and they've got the second best away record in the division behind leaders Forest Green.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of bad bets from this start of the season, certainly backing Bradford for top seven and to win the league, we'll file them under that category. And then finally, Dan, your last bet of the week.
Yeah, as I said, I'm going to stick with League Two. I'm going to go with Walsall to win away to Barrow. I mean, Walsall, you know, going off as outsiders for this game, but they look a lot steelier now. And since Mike Flynn's gone in there, I think getting Mike Flynn for them is a real fantastic coup. I mean, he's done a brilliant job down at Newport, not just the FA Cup runs that they went on, but he's had them consistently pushing for promotion out of League Two. You know, Newport, a club with a small budget. I think Walsall have done so well to get him. And you look at their first four games, you know, under him, he took the job and they were on a terrible... They had been on a terrible run under the previous manager, Matt Taylor, but first four games, they played three of the top eight sides and have only lost one of those matches. They've got a great win, 1-0 at Forest Green in the week. They got a 1-1 draw at Northampton, who I think are second in the division. So they just look a team transformed. They're going to third bottom Barrow, who have won one of their last nine games at risk of relegation. Seem to have a lot of problems scoring goals. Haven't scored more than once in any home game since Christmas. That's seven and counting. So, no, Walsall for me, look a really good bet there at Barrow.
Thanks to Dan Childs, as always. And if you do have EFL questions for following weeks, just feel free to tweet us. We'll always include them in the show. It's always great to hear from you. Mark, how did last week's tipping go? Because you were coming off really hot form.
Yeah, no good last week, Jack. The Man City and over 1.5 ruined the treble, ruined the nap. So hope Son got the each way bit in the first goal scorers, but let's hope for better this week.
It's always, it's like when a golfer has a really good first round and then it's just difficult to follow it up again, isn't it? They talk about that quite a lot.
Betting's tough, you know, like it's really difficult to... Well, you just can't win every week. I mean, you know, just... goes without saying you can't win every week. So you need to have fun with it and just hope over the long term you're ahead at the end, or if you're not, you know, you're not too far behind at least.
Absolutely. Let's hope for a good week this week. And let's start with your prop shop.
Yeah, so Kylian Mbappe suspended for Paris Saint-Germain away to Nice. So I am looking at the other stars in that team. Messi 7-2, Neymar 6-1. I think without Mbappe, 6-1 Neymar feels like a decent enough price to me. He's had seven shots in his two games since coming back from injury. He scored at Nantes. He missed a penalty as well, didn't he, in that game in quite comical fashion. But yeah, I mean, I think that it will be one of those two. And you know, if one's 7-2, the other one's 6-1, you might want to back both, but I'd probably rather just be on the Brazilian, I think.
Okay. What about a long shot? This is one of my favourite segments of the show. I never quite know where you're going. And that excites me.
Yeah, this was sickening last week because Wolfsburg, you know, were in front and conceded quite late on. I could only draw at Gladbach. I'm going to cheat a little bit this week, Jack. I'm not going to go for a short price one. I'm going to go for a 12-1 shot, but it's in the Europa Conference rather than in the weekend football.
So there's a bit of a
word going around for Feyenoord to win Europa Conference. And I'm told that 12-1 is too big. When I look at it, I can certainly see why. I got Partizan in the last 16, so it's by, you know, quite a good draw, really. They're only 6 points off Ajax in the Eredivisie. We know how good Ajax are. They've got a better goal difference than PSV, and PSV are being sort of talked up as well in this competition. We have got another sort of already bet running in this one. You might remember on Rennes. They got Leicester, which was not the draw that Rennes or I wanted. But it does mean that I think one of the sort of big guns, really, in terms of top teams, will have to go out in the last 16. So maybe an opportunity for Feyenoord each way at 12-1.
So most people are, around March time, are building up their Cheltenham portfolio. You're building up your Conference League portfolio.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Europa Ever League, I'm very excited about the Europa League. You know, I was banging on about Barcelona for a while. They had that difficult draw with Napoli, but they dished out a convincing win against them. Dortmund went out. I'm really excited about the Europa League. And so now I'm sort of trying to just fill up the basket in the Europa Conference as well.
Excellent. What about a treble, Mark?
Yeah, a really tough week, I think, that this week. So I'm going to go for teams to win and under 3.5 goals in matches that we've already discussed. So all Premier League, Chelsea to win at Burnley and under 3.5 goals, Arsenal at Watford and under 3.5, Man City to beat Manchester United and under 3.5. In terms of two of those, you've got Chelsea and Arsenal away from home against well-organised teams. So probably going to have to grind it out. And, you know, the derby factor makes me think that, you know, United are going to keep it quite close at the Etihad, but probably not be good enough to get anything from the game.
One bet, one strongest bet. What is it? What's the name?
Yeah, so I'm going to play it a little bit safer and go for Arsenal to win an under 4.5 goals, which is odds of 5-6.
Since say that again.
Yeah, so Arsenal to win an under 4.5 goals at 5-6. So, you know, an Arsenal 4-0 does it, Arsenal 3-1, etc. Since the 4-0 defeat at Liverpool, if you can go back that far for Arsenal, they're averaging an XG against of 0.86 in those 12 games. So really tightened up defensively. On only three occasions have they conceded an expected goal of more than one in that time in the Premier League. To Manchester United, to Leeds and Manchester City, all of whom had a penalty against them, which obviously, you know, bumps up the XG considerably. Their non-penalty XG against is really low. They've had a nice break again. They never seem to play, actually, Arsenal, but they've had another nice little break. Watford have had three clean sheets in six under Roy Hodgson. So they're not a terrible team defensively. Just don't see where they really hurt Arsenal. And then it's just a matter of whether Arsenal can get the win. Arsenal have only scored six goals in five Premier League games this year. The reverse fixture was 1-0. I can just see Arsenal winning, but not by some, you know, crazy scoreline. So if you're looking to bump up the Arsenal price, why not get it with the under 4.5 goals?
Yeah, I like the sound of that. Let's get some Twitter questions. Always lovely to hear from our listeners. A reminder, please feel free to get involved with future weeks. Mark, well worth a follow on Twitter at Mark Langdon. Also our sport account at Racing Post Sport, the perfect place to get all of your sporting goodness. And of course, get involved with Future Bets Club's episode. John got in touch. He said, if you wanted a long shot Yankee or Trixie, Mark, what market are you looking at?
Yeah, I tend to go for sort of first or anytime goal scorers in this one. I mean, if it's favourites, it would be first. If it was sort of long shots, you know, you're probably looking more at the anytime. I just think that there's more juice in those markets than, say, correct scores that I know some people do.
Nathan, what's the secret behind good teams being priced up generously against poor teams and then not winning? Northampton were even money at Scunthorpe last week. The price seemed too good to be true, and it turns out it was because they ended up drawing.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is something we talk about quite a lot in terms of underlying statistics, and that where the league table maybe gives you one view of a team, but the numbers gives you another one. And I think somebody like Northampton, and you know, you could pick out other examples of, if you look at a league table, and a team is kind of quite a bit bigger than you'd expect another team around them, it suggests that maybe their shot stats are not great. And I think that's certainly the case with Northampton, a team that rely a lot on set pieces. Their centre-backs, I think both their centre-backs have got six goals or something, you know, this season. So generally speaking, the bookmakers and professional punters they're not mad on teams like that, because it's an inefficient way of scoring goals over a long period of time.
Great stuff. Hope that answers your question, Nathan. Art Vanderley says, Everton are priced up at sevens on to beat Boreham Wood tonight, and Manchester City go off shorter than that against teams at the bottom of the Premier League. Which is the bigger gap, City to the bottom of the Premier League or the bottom of the Premier League to the National League? I'm really glad that this question has been asked, because I was picking your brains on this the other week. You see City go off
really short prices in the Premier League. And then, yeah, Everton against the National League side, sevens on.
It's a really interesting question, this one. My sort of view on it, Jack, is that there's still a bigger gap between an average team that sort of Everton, I suppose, in this instance, and a National League side than there is between, say, Man City and Burnley or a team like that. I think in terms of the FA Cup, obviously, you've got to factor in that managers sometimes don't play full strength teams, and that maybe Lampard thinks the Premier League game is bigger on Monday against Tottenham. I know they've certainly got some players that can't play in the game. And I would also, I suppose, question like where we're calling Boreham Wood a National League team. And of course they are, because that's where their status is currently. But I'm looking at it thinking it might not be that much between a top National League team and even sort of really going well in sort of League Two. If you look at somebody like Sutton United, look how easily they've kind of adjusted to League Two. And maybe if Boreham Wood were in League Two, they might be fighting it out for promotion. Then all of a sudden, you're talking about a League One team. So I suppose it's just where you place kind of these National League teams. I think there's probably about five or six of them that would fancy their chances in League Two, never mind in the National League. So I suppose that's probably why, you know, Boreham Wood are not seen as a typical non-league team and are probably sort of better than that.
Excellent. Really intriguing question, that one. Thanks for getting in touch. NFL better, all the big questions coming in this week. Does Mark have a view on the TV broadcasting rules in the UK? Think scenarios like next Sunday when there's 5 2 o'clock games and just one being shown live on telly.
Yeah, I mean, I think generally speaking, I'm against the blackout. I think we underestimate sort of the British fans' love of their own team and this idea that, you know, you wouldn't go and watch Dagenham because there was a Premier League game on at 3 o'clock. I don't necessarily buy into that. I can understand why there is that concern, but I think it's absolute bonkers on a Sunday when it's not up against anything else that you can't, you know, just stick all of them games on the red button.
There's nothing more saddening than sitting down after your Sunday roast and realising there's no football on the telly. What am I going to watch?
It's annoying. Yeah, it is annoying. I mean, you know, people do find ways with their illegal streams, and you just feel like everyone would be better off monetizing that situation rather than, you know, going through the black market like that.
Absolutely. Zach, any idea why so few bookies offer next managerial odds for League One and Two clubs? Had a tip off a few days before an appointment at Bradford.
Yeah, so Zach had the word about Mark Hughes at Bradford. That's probably why. There's probably because there's the nod and the wink of the public, and it's out of the praying eyes of the bookmakers. I suspect it's just too difficult for them kind of markets to be managed successfully, or in sort of League One and League Two, and probably even in some Championship cases as well.
I love this kind of thing. You're obviously a man with good connections with the club you support, Mark. Is there ever a location that kind of solidifies the rumour? So with Norwich City, for example, if someone's been spotted at the local Morrison's, which is opposite Carrow Road, everyone's like, yeah, it's happening now. Is there an equivalent for Tottenham?
Not really, no.
I think Mourinho and Aldi or something.
No, I think because London is so big. I mean, a lot of them live in sort of this posh bit of North London, but it's so big, you know, that you can dot around in lots of places. And there are occasions when people are just in London on, you know, holiday or, you know, city break or whatever it is.
Are you saying people don't come to Norwich for city breaks?
Oh, they do. They absolutely do. But if I saw a professional footballer there that wasn't playing for Norwich at the time, I'd probably be wondering what's up.
Stuart, bearing in mind their form since another huge spend in January, if Wrexham don't get promoted this season, will they be odds on to win the title next season?
No, I don't. I mean, I don't think they'll be odds on. I was speaking to somebody about this morning because I saw the question come in. Obviously, there's a lot of caveats with Wrexham, and you know, who else will be in the National League next season? If some of the kind of bigger teams, Stockport, Chesterfield or whatever, you know, if they both go up, then maybe it's a weaker division. He felt that I was speaking to a non-league judge, said he backed Wrexham at about 2-1. He felt that, you might get a bit of 9-4, maybe even sort of 5-2, depending on the shape of the league. So it sounds like Stuart wants to, he's already lining up a bet on Wrexham. It looks like you'll get better than sort of even money, that's for sure. So if you get to, it sounds like you might be able to get a bit 2-1, depending on the league and who else they sign, of course.
This is the brilliant thing about Mark Langdon's Bets Club. This man can answer anything. The connections that you have, Mark, with just every league across the world is wonderful. One final question from Tony. I think we might actually answer this next week, Mark. He says, most stupid betting decision ever. Now, I'm not saying you've had tons of them over your time, but you might need a little while to think about that. So we'll get that.
No, there's been too many, Jack. There's been too many. So we'll get to that next week. He said his most stupid one was that he used a free bet on a draw no bet. That is not a great use of a free bet, because you don't get the stake back if it ends in a draw, do you? But I'll have a think, Tony, and we'll get back to you next week.
Top man, Tony, and thank you to everyone for listening. It's been a really enjoyable episode this week. We'll be back again soon for another episode. As always, lots of selections and tips put up in this week's edition of Bets Club. Please never feel the need to back them all and only ever gamble with money that you can afford to lose. Thanks to all of our contributors and, of course, all of our questions. See you all again very soon. Bye-bye.